You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, Rolling Stone magazine recently updated its list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. More than half that list is new since the last time they did it. We'll break down who's in, who's out, and take your nominations for the greatest song ever. Now, a new report shows that no state in the country has a higher rate of imprisoning black adults than Wisconsin. According to the Sentencing Project, 1 in 36 black adults are behind bars in the state. While black people are only 6% of Wisconsin's overall population, they make up 42% of the state's prison population. On the national scale, black Americans are imprisoned at nearly 5 times the rate of white people here in Wisconsin. That is 12 times that of white people. In addition, the report says black people face disproportionate arrest rates and other factors that contribute to longer prison terms. We're going to dive into what's going on and what a group based in Milwaukee is doing to help former inmates transition back into society. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to this report? What do you think it would take to bring Wisconsin in line, at least with other states? If you're black, have you or someone you know been arrested or imprisoned? What do you want people to understand about that? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Claire Amari is a reporting fellow at Wisconsin Watch. She wrote about that report on the racial disparity in Wisconsin's prisons. Claire, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
For starters, this report comes from the Sentencing Project. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Sure. The Sentencing Project is an organization based in Washington, D.C. They promote effective responses to crime that both minimize imprisonment and promote racial, economic, and gender justice. The study that we're talking about is something they did on racial and ethnic disparities in state prisons nationwide.
There have been reports about racial gaps in the state's criminal justice system and in many other ways in the state. You talked to a lot of people and got responses from people working in these fields. What was their response to this report that puts Wisconsin top or, I guess, worst in the nation when it comes to this disparity?
Shocked but not surprised is what I would say. You know, it's a known fact that there are big racial disparities in the Wisconsin criminal justice system. I think what really took people by surprise was that Wisconsin has the highest rate nationwide.
How do we compare, say, to our neighboring Midwestern states? Obviously still a higher rate, but are we kind of on a par or do we stand out even among our neighbors?
You know, the report found actually that states in the upper Midwest tended to have larger disparities than states elsewhere, the upper Midwest and to some extent the Northeast. So, you know, Wisconsin being at the top of that list. I would say that the next highest state in Iowa, the next highest rate of incarceration of black people in the Midwest is in Iowa. That's 1 in 48 black adults in Iowa is imprisoned, compared, of course, to 1 in 36 in Wisconsin.
Talking to Claire Amari, reporting fellow at Wisconsin Watch, looking at a new report showing racial disparity in incarceration here in Wisconsin, the biggest such gap in the entire country among states. Claire, what are some of the ideas out there about why Wisconsin?
Yeah, so it's not entirely clear, why Wisconsin is differentiated from other states. What I did find was some states, particularly in the South, the racial disparities between the number of white and black people incarcerated, those disparities are smaller because they incarcerate not only a lot of black people, but a lot of white people too. And that's not the case in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, you know, does not incarcerate white people at the rate of some other states. And what other people told me was that, you know, there are just racist elements in the criminal justice system nationwide, or I should say at least racial, you know, differences in the outcomes of the criminal justice system nationwide. And Wisconsin has those too.
What kind of suggestions did you run into when it came to possible solutions to trying to tackle this disparity?
Sure. Well, the Sentencing Project had three big ones. The first one was they suggested that mandatory minimum sentences be eliminated. They said that those limit the discretion of impartial judges, and disproportionately, we find that people of color have longer sentences. The second thing, I thought this was quite interesting, they required they said that Wisconsin should require prospective and retroactive racial impact statements for all criminal laws. So that basically means a study of how a law will or does affect different racial groups. And they said, you know, states should repeal laws that are found to disproportionately affect people of color. The third thing was that they recommended decriminalizing low-level drug offenses. These accumulate disproportionately in communities of color, and they generally just drive increased involvement in the criminal justice system.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Louis is driving through Wisconsin right now. Louis, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was listening to your show. It's pretty interesting. I just said it's like the elephant in the room, you know. There's something that's not slight to touch on, but I'm thinking that maybe it's not a racial issue. It's maybe it's a cultural issue. I don't think it's an inherent biological trait that some people of color are more prone to have crime in their life, but because of socialization or inculturation processes that their generations have been through and what they've had to go through, I think that they are more prone to be in these situations, and that the only way out of there is through education and job, better jobs.
Louis, thanks for the call. Claire, one theory that people might bring up, as Louis is pointing to, maybe the disparities are in rates of crime committed. Did the Sentencing Project report look at that or address that?
They did not, but what they did address was the fact that rates of imprisonment, you know, there are so many different factors that contribute to that. Everything from, as you know, as the caller was saying, you know, education levels, employment, poverty basically really drives high levels of imprisonment. And so one way to address this problem would be to address those outside factors as well.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. You also looked, Claire, at Wisconsin's legislature and the governor. Are there efforts out there to do some of the things recommended by the Sentencing Project when it comes to reducing the number of people incarcerated and reducing that that racial gap?
So there were no efforts being made at this time that were specifically in line with the Sentencing Project's recommendations, but there were some definitely incremental steps that we're trying to take to reduce this problem. I spoke with Representative Evan Goyke about Assembly Bill 69, which passed the Assembly and is now before the state Senate. This is a bill that would allow low-level, nonviolent offenders, including people with convictions for drug possession, to get their records expunged. That's important because there are over 200 professions in Wisconsin where you cannot get licensed if you have a criminal record. And as we know, you know, lack of employment, underemployment is a driving factor in imprisonment. So by making it possible for more people to get their records expunged, we would find hopefully that fewer people would be likely to return to prison.
And Claire, as we wrap up, what are you watching for next on this story?
Yeah, I think one thing that definitely is important is getting as many voices at the table as possible. And that means the voices of people who were, you know, or even are currently incarcerated. What is that experience like? You know, this can't be a conversation that's just being had, you know, in the halls of Congress. This can't be a conversation that's just being had between privileged people who've never been in prison before. This is something that, you know, everyone needs to contribute to.
Claire, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Claire Amari is a reporting fellow at Wisconsin Watch. We talked to her about her piece on racial disparities in Wisconsin prisons. Again, the state imprisons one in every 36 black adults, the highest rate in the nation. Coming up, we'll hear from a Milwaukee group about how they help people reenter society after getting out of prison. It's an effort led by ex-inmates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this your story if you were locked up? What was it like when you were released? What was the hardest adjustment you had to make? What would have helped you the most? If that's you or someone in your family, love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about a new report that says Wisconsin has the highest imprisonment rate of black adults in the country. According to the Sentencing Project, 1 in 36 black adults is behind bars in the state, highest rate in the nation. Our next guest says it's a slap in the face, but he's working on changes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If this is your story, if you or someone in your family has been incarcerated, love to hear your experiences transitioning to life after prison. What do you wish you knew then that you know now? What would have helped you make that transition? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ramiah Whiteside is the prison in-reach organizer for Expo. That's Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing. They're based in Milwaukee and have chapters around the state. They help people reenter society after being released. Ramiah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You were quoted as saying this report on Wisconsin's black prison population was a slap in the face. What shocked you about that?
Well, at the end of the day, I think it was surprising because you look at these types of statistics, like, you know, some of our bigger municipalities, New York, maybe California, or bigger areas, maybe down by Texas. So you think of the good Midwestern approach to things, it just wouldn't be our backyard. And this time it is. And I think I got caught with my blinders on, because if we have small successes over in this area, you tend to think that these small successes are a bigger representation of what's happening at large. And in this case, it wasn't.
What small successes have you seen, Ramiah, that we could maybe build on?
So one of the things, of course, me being a directly impacted person, since I've come home, there are a lot of elected officials on both sides of the aisle interested in the lived experience of a person like myself who has basically grown up in the system. So that's one win going forward, a small win that we can definitely expand on, because they're listening. They're having us come to the table to share our lived experience in order to legislate and craft laws that are more indicative of our zip codes, our demographic.
Let's talk about one end of the problem here as people leave prison. And that's a lot of what that you've experienced yourself. You work with people making that transition. What are some of the maybe easiest ways that we can make a difference to help make sure that people leave prison and stay out of prison?
Well, that's a good question. First and foremost, I think the best approach when we're discussing reentry is not waiting until the very last minute to start initiating programs that we're going to use during transition. So the first thing I would do if I had the ability to do it was start the reentry process on day one, not day 4,751. So if that makes sense, you start changing that construct, you start changing that mindset on day one, right after you get sentenced, or right after you're in the county jail or house of correction, or right when you go through intake at Dodge. That is when you start the reentry process. So then you have 6 months, 6 years, or 20 years of being reacclimated back into the society. And it's not like a last minute hustle and bustle, which, again, cramming for an exam never really works.
Looking at the other end of things now, you've talked in the media about your own experience getting into crime at an early age. Was there a point when you look back and where you think, if I'd had this message or if I'd had this intervention, it could have turned that path away from prison?
I think what is different today versus back when I was waived at the age of 17 is the amount and the quality of resources, the wraparound services. So back when I was waived, back in the early 90s, like, if you had a relentless approach in the schools, in the community, and within your family or communal construct to save our youth, meaning it's constant, because here's the fact, okay? The bad guys or the negative behaviors out there are 100% all the time, 24/7. So our approach to combat that has to be 100% all the time, 24/7. So those wraparound services, they kind of have to be receptive and on your radar at all times, not necessarily in your face, but on your radar at all times. So the youth, when they look up with certain life challenges, they can and see lifeguards right before them, right there.
Talking to Ramiah Whiteside, prison in-reach organizer for Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, or Expo. It's a Milwaukee-based group with groups around the state that helps people reenter society after being released from prison. Talk about this after a new report on racial disparities and imprisonment in Wisconsin in particular, leading the nation in that gap. Ramaya, I wanted to ask you about your in-reach work for Expo. What kind of things do you do when you are in contact with people who are currently incarcerated?
One of the biggest platforms that we are currently engaged in is basically voter education. So all things political, from the local ballot all the way up to the national level. So what I found during my tenure of incarceration was it's a lot of time to really see how our systems work and get educated on that. So now having that as part of my backdrop, I know that if you send information on the inside, people will read it. They'll dissect it. They'll take it apart. They'll ask questions. And then they'll also share the information that they learned with their loved ones, with their communities. So with InReach, basically, it's, you know, social studies 101. We don't even have social studies classes in our high schools anymore. So what we typically do is provide that information and educate our people on the inside. So then that ripple effect would hit their people on the outside who are out here in the community.
And then what kind of things do you do at Expo for that person who is maybe cramming for that exam, like you said, as they're getting ready to leave prison and adjust to a new life?
Well, one of the biggest things we do is, for one, that cramming analogy, that is unacceptable for Expo. So therefore, what we do is we onboard people while they're still incarcerated. So whether you have 6 years to do or 60 days to do, we want to have conversations with you to help connect you with some of these resources out here that you are definitely going to need as you transition. So then when you actually get out on that Tuesday or that Friday and, you know, you have a lot of questions and you need some direction, you can come down to the office. And we've literally taken people from point A to point B because they don't even know how to ride the city's buses anymore. So again, we get the information to them ahead of time. So it's you're not as shell shocked when you do transition out here. And we want them to recognize, coming from a trusted messenger, that me, I've been there. So that helps me be a trusted and authenticated messenger to assist people and support people with navigating this grid out here.
With the judicial system now, the criminal justice system in particular, are there cases where you think, yes, that Black person is treated differently than that white person for the same crime, whether we're talking about teenagers or grownups? What kind of, and if so, what kind of changes do you want to see?
I think if we could ever take the ethnicity out of it, so I'll just direct that narrative. So we're all, I believe, one race. I think we have different ethnicities. So that's a big difference. So if you take the ethnic part off the grid, I think we would have a better approach to adding up the mitigating or extenuating factors with any particular case. However, because we it's been ingrained in us to have this implicit bias. It's been ingrained in us to have these different systemic biases. We need to get that out of our judicial system. We need to get that off of our prosecutor's grid. And we also need to get that out of our defense attorney's approach. So nationally, we know, and even by this report, it's been confirmed that we have a psyche when we look at, you know, a young Black male or a young Black woman. We have to get rid of that. The only way we get rid of that is really reintroducing ourselves to each other. You know, so that takes conversations on a community level. That takes conversations between those disenfranchised zip codes and our judicial system.
We had heard from a caller earlier on who talked about the importance of education and local jobs in the communities that you're talking about, the hardest hit zip codes or blocks, however you want to define it. Are there interventions you're hoping for, Ramaya?
Well, there's always room for improvement. In order to get to where we need to go, we all have to speak the same language. We all have to be on the same page. The only way to do that is on the ground level, start having these conversations. Again, I'll reiterate, I've had conversations with elected officials. I've had conversations with chief DAs that traditionally, historically, I would have never had back in the days. I was a bad guy, so it wouldn't have happened. I was adverse to the system. Now, let's get some microphones on the ground to have that exchange outside of an election year. Let's have those exchanges. And many of our officials actually do that. We need to do that more so we can reconnect with this generation that's coming ahead, who has been disclosed and disenfranchised even socially due to the pandemic. They're even worse at odds because they're behind a year plus with socialization skills. You know, Zoom can't do everything. There's something about being social with your people that you can't get from a Zoom. So reconnecting and just basically starting some of those conversations all over again.
Your group works with and is led by people who were incarcerated. Do you have a message for people who maybe just left prison in the last month or year about how they can get involved?
Well, we do have the information on all our social media, so they can definitely look up expowisconsin.org. We have Twitter, Facebook, all the social medias on there. We have an office in Milwaukee, office in Madison, as well as local chapters around the state. So they could, you know, Google it, it'll come up. And my only message for anybody out there navigating this grid of reentry and transition that I would say to them is reach out to our chapter, reach out to a similar or like-minded organization and ask questions. Reach out before you think that you're alone and nobody's out here to support you or assist you or be one of your biggest cheerleaders. Make those calls or make those inquiries because you'll find out there are a lot of very good-natured and kind-hearted professional people out here with lived experience who will assist you and support you to get you over that hump. That's the gist of what we do because there's more of us out here who are successful than I think people really realize. And that's a part of people investing in us in the community who you wouldn't even think invest in us in the community.
It's a good place to leave it. Ramaya, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Ramaya Whiteside is the Prison InReach Core Organizer for the group EXPO. That stands for Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing. We talked to them about how they help former inmates transition back into society. Earlier, we had a conversation with Claire Amari of Wisconsin Watch. She wrote about the disproportionate number of Black adults in state prisons. Wisconsin, the biggest gap in the country.